racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello, I'm Craig Revell.
I'm Colin Ford.
And I'm Peter Norton. Welcome to this week's episode of Inside Motorsport,
where we're going straight out to Phillip Island Raceway. Craig Denyer was there for all the action in the GT production category today. And Craig, once again, the small cars put on a big race meeting.
Absolutely, Craig. Fabulous race meeting here at Phillip Island today. And plenty of action too, particularly in race one, when young Jimmy McKinnon, who's a former Formula Ford driver, driving a Holden Astra SRI in the four-cylinder class of GDV, had a huge crash at turn two. In fact, it was just replayed on Channel 10. It'll be replayed again at Sports Tonight later on this evening. But he had a big crash, almost four barrel rolls up onto the earth bank, and almost landed in amongst the spectator cars at turn two. Luckily, he's okay, but the car is extensively damaged.
Now, the Fords had been dominating both in the V8 and six-cylinder categories at Wakefield Park, and then in qualifying, they were once again very strong at Phillip Island this weekend.
Yeah, pretty much the same, I guess, race day today too, Craig, except the real surprise was Alan Holgerson, who drives a 3-litre V6 Toyota Camry. He is only a 21-year-old service mechanic from Bill Buckle Toyota in Sydney, and he put on a tremendous display in both race one and two to finish second to Darrell Coon's 6-cylinder XR6 in that class. But he pushed him all the way in both races and finished right on his tail in both races. And again was Fords 1 and 2. Kent Yeldon in the XR8 took out the V8 class. Coon took out the 6-cylinder class. But it was really a great show from the young 21-year-old in the Camry that proved that it's still got plenty of pace.
This class, the classes running on the weekend were, of course, for the smaller categories in C, D and E. But with Rick Bates and the Satrian having only a second meeting, and a lot of the other smaller cars like the Suzukis, which have been stalwarts in the division for so many years now, it does always provide that interesting class-type racing that we're so used to seeing throughout the years of, production cars.
Absolutely, and very close in the four-cylinder class, again between the Proton Satria and the Holden Astra SRI. In fact, in race one, it was almost a dead heat between Kosi Kalazidis in the Proton and Luke Yeldon, the current Formula Ford champion from last year. They actually finished pretty much dead heat across the line. In fact, I think the official gap given by the timing monitor was about 3/1000ths of a second, which gave the race win to Kalazidis after Yeldon led the race for most of the time. And then in race two today, again, Kalazidis got the win in the Proton, but not by much over Luke Yeldon. And it was a tremendous battle. Unfortunately, Rick Bates in the Daihatsu Sirion had a rear wheel bearing failure in race one today, and the wheel departed the car, and he was a scratching from race two. So they've got quite a bit of work to do on the rear end of the brand new Daihatsu.
And with the poor right points for the production car category, how do they stand at the moment?
Yeah, good question. In fact, Craig, I actually don't have them in front of me, but I can tell you that Darrell Coon, by virtue of his 2 second places today, would certainly move through to the class lead. Kent Yeldon, who won both races today, didn't do the first round at Wakefield Park. So Coon will certainly be the championship leader in both the six-cylinder and outright class, so a great result from him. I think you'll find that John McElroy will continue to lead the V8 class, and it'll be certainly Luke Yeldon who'll now lead the four-cylinder class, given the fact that even though Kosi Kalazidis had 2 wins today in the Proton, he didn't contest the first round either.
Well, it sounds like it was a great meeting. What sort of crowd were out there for the GTP cars?
Yeah, good crowd, and also around to the Konica V8 series here too at Phillip Island this weekend. But, a good crowd and quite a pleasant day. They were forecasting rain over the weekend, but it was sunny on occasions and a pleasant temperature of about 15, 16 degrees. So all in all, everybody enjoyed a very, very good day's racing.
And sounds like it was a great build-up for what has been a fantastic year of pro car racing already. And what we're going to see in 2 weeks' time down here at the nation's capital is, of course, the Nation Cup and the GT performance categories on the streets, which will once again be fantastic.
Can't wait to get there. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. We'll have the Nation's Cup cars there, as you said, also in GDP, Class A and B, for what will be the third round of the Century Batteries Australian GT Production Car Championship for their category. John Bow back in the Ford Mustang up against the Mitsubishi Evo 5, Subaru STIs, the Holden 300 kilowatt HSV Commodore. And there's no question that we had some tremendous racing at Canberra last year. Can't wait to get there. Got the de-icing fluid already packed.
And that might be needed with a couple of the mornings we've had lately, I can tell you. But just a quick one. I don't know whether I haven't been able to get any updates on the Nürburgring 24-hour race, which, of course, Ross Palmer, Maude Galdry and Peter Floyd are all participating in from Australia.
I can tell you as of 4 hours ago that they were leading their class. And they've moved into the about 37th outright. They started back in 54th or 53rd outright, but they qualified in pole position in their class, but they were still leading their class. They lost about 8 minutes when they replaced a wheel bearing in the pits, but continued to maintain the class lead, and they're a lap up, well, they were a lap up on second place in that class. Race was due to finish tonight about 12 midnight Australian time.
Right. Craig, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, and we look forward to seeing you in the nation's capital in just a couple of weeks' time.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks for your support, and we'll certainly try and turn on a great show for you at Canberra.
The Indy 500 is only now 6 hours away from getting underway. Running through the qualifying order, on the front row, Scott Sharp in the Delphi Automotive Systems car has set the fastest time. He has, in fact, taken out two wins so far already. The pole position and his Kelly Motorsport team were involved in the Cause Indy 500 Pit Stop Challenge, earning $42,500 for their first victory in the challenge. $5,000 of that amount will be donated to the American Red Cross. The runner-up, Gallus Racing, remains tied for the most consecutive, or for the most victories in the 25-year history of the contest. Gallus and Penske Racing have won it 6 times. Kelly Racing, the crew of Scott Sharp's team, turned in faster times in each of the 4 rounds of the challenge. So a good result there, and things looking very good for Scott Sharp, the pole sitter. The middle of the front row is Greg Ray.
It was okay. I mean, we ran in traffic. We ran full of fuel. You know, I think some of the big times early in the session, I think they're running on good tires and light fuel. So got there running in the race trim and running with 35 gallons of fuel. And, you know, I mean, I think the race pace is going to be between 215 and 220, and it's going to be a hard battle out there. So, I mean, I think we're reasonably happy with our balance of our car. We'll have to wait and see what the final weather is going to be Sunday morning, make a few final adjustments, and go racing.
Robbie Gordon in the first of the Foyt Richard Childress Racing entries will start outside of the front row in number 41. Row 2 sees Mark Dismore, Gildy Friend, and former champion Ari Leindike.
I wish I could know what's coming up on Sunday. It's going to be a pretty interesting day. I think the difference between this year and the last couple of years is that we've had a close qualifying field, but I think on race day you're going to have a lot more contenders than last year and the year before. It could be one of many teams and drivers up there, you know, battling for the lead. So it's going to be interesting and fun to watch for sure.
Row 3 sees Tony Stewart going for 1,100 miles of competition in 24 hours. He'll be running at the Indy 500 and then flying to Charlotte to take part in the Coca-Cola 600. Jeff Ward's the middle of row number 3 with Robbie Buell the outside. Buddy Lazier, a previous race winner, is starting in the inside of row number 4 alongside the rookie Elio Castro Neves. Jimmy Vassa starts on the outside.
Well, car's good. We had to make a couple changes this morning. It's a little bit lower than it should have been. And, you know, running out there on my own, we're at 219. I figure that's a good pace. I think some guys are running bigger numbers, but scrubbing in tires, maybe running a little light on fuel. So, yeah, I think that our chances are good. Car feels good. We're just ready to go.
The driver with the most outstanding form so far in the Indy Racing League Northern Lights Series is Sam Hornish Jr. He'll start from the inside of row number 5.
Things are going good as far as our race setup goes. Didn't end up where we want to be for pit stop practice. I mean, pit stop competition, but that's how it goes.
Middle of row 5 is Robbie McGee. Sarah Fisher starts on the outside. Row 6 is Scott Goodyear making another start at the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah, I think we're ready. Car seems to be pretty good today. We're running a lot of fuel in it, and overall, that's sort of what we're looking for today. There's some pretty big times out there. If they're running that in race day, we'll be in a bit of a chase mode. But I think that we've got a pretty good race car right now in traffic from what I felt during the week and also now. And I think that we should be good on race day.
Row 6 sees Jack Lazier on the middle with John Herb, another rookie, on the outside. Alonzo Jr., a previous two-time winner of the 500, will start back from row number 7. Alonzo Jr. also had his moments on pump day.
Well, what can I say? I mean, if we were ready to go out, we would have gone out, but we didn't need to, so we just kept pulling out of line and we'll go from there.
Bruno Ginquera makes the start from the middle of row number 7. Alongside him, Michael Andretti. Row 8, Nicholas Manicazzi, who starts on the inside, he too driving another of the Target Chip Ganassi races. Jarrett Schroeder starts in the middle of 8 alongside Buzz Colkin. Row 9, Eddie Cheever Jr. will start alongside Davey Hamilton and Donnie Bleacher. His team owner, AJ Foyt, was sure he could do it.
Well, if I didn't think a lot of Donnie Bleacher, first of all, he wouldn't have been in my car. You know, I've watched him race. I knew a lot about him. And like I said, that's the reason he's in here, because I have a lot of respect for him. I think he's a good race driver.
Row 10, Ulisseo Salazar got his way into the field. Stephen Gregoire and Ayrton Dare round out row number 10. With row 11, Corey Withrell and Billy Boat managing to break into the field, although he sat on the bubble on bubble day for almost half the day.
Well, I would have had, I'd like to have a little more time to prepare for a race setup, but, you know, right now we're just happy to be in this race. We're, you know, the Curb Records team has done a great job for me, and we've got, you know, a great team. It's going to be a long race. I think there's a group of cars in the back that have run quick that are going to be going to the front. So we're going to look to try to hang on with that pack and, you know, hopefully, you know, just be patient in the last 50 laps, you know, have stayed on the lead lap and be in a position to, you know, to have a good finish.
Felipe Gilofoni rounds out the 33-car field, which should take the green flag in a little under 6 hours from now. Well, one man who took to the track early morning our time was Mark Webber. Congratulations, Mark. The first Australian to win at Monaco since Jack Brabham did many years ago.
Well, yeah, it's been a long time between drinks here for the Aussies, but we had a good day yesterday, and to win the race from pole position was very timely, and was a brilliant afternoon, really. I really enjoyed it, and, you know, every time I've been on this track, I've done a bit of damage to the car, and I wanted to really break the duck and show the circuit who's boss. And to win today was win yesterday was great. So it's good.
Is Monaco the hardest circuit you have to learn and drive?
It's learning. It's not too bad, but it is very, very difficult to not put the thing in the barriers. I mean, you've to race for an hour and 15, you know, pushing very hard, one small, you know, lack of concentration, and you're going to find yourself in a huge amount of trouble. So that is the hardest thing around here. It's just there's no real escape roads, there's nowhere, and if you do, you know, obviously make a break in a bit late or miss a shift down or, you know, things like that, you're in trouble. So once I came out of the last corner on the last lap, I knew that I had it, but not before.
The second place runner is the championship leader, Justin Wilson, and of course he has had quite a good run so far this year, where you've had certainly your share of problems.
Yeah, we have had a few races where it hasn't turned out at all, and Justin's been very, very consistent, and that's why he's leading the championship. But we feel that we learnt a lot this weekend in terms of, obviously, you know, doing well here, but also a few things with the setup of the car and things which I think will benefit us, hopefully, you know, for the races to come. So, but this was a good weekend for us.
Well, congratulations, Mark, and we do wish you all the best. Where are you off to next for either testing or racing?
I go back to England on... what are we? So I go back to England on Monday, there for a day, and then I go back to Hoffenheim for 2 days in the 3000, and then next Sunday I fly to Montreal for the Canadian Grand Prix.
Well, it sounds like you're getting plenty of frequent flyers, and obviously you're not using Ansett.
No, I'm always on Qantas, so it's just plenty of flying, but comes to the job.
And of course, we must give a plug to your great sponsors, Yellow Pages and Foster's.
Yep, those guys, have been absolutely brilliant. I'm on the Foster's boat right now in the harbour, and we're going to have a good day today and celebrate the win from yesterday. And Yellow Pages, they've got me here, really. So fantastic weekend for everybody.
Well, congratulations. Enjoy the Monaco Formula One Grand Prix as you watch it in the lap of luxury, as is accustomed to all you aspiring Formula One drivers.
Thanks a lot.
Mark Webber, thanks very much for your time once again here on Inside Motorsport.
And joining us now is Neville Wilkinson from V8X magazine, and he's at Phillip Island for the next round of the Konica V8 series. And how's it going down there today, Neville?
Mate, we thought it was going to be raining, overcast, windy, cold, still a bit cold, but the sun came out, so it was actually a really good day. Sunshine, which is very uncharacteristic for Melbourne, or this part of Victoria.
And at the last round at Winton, it was carnage everywhere on the first corner. Did they stay out of trouble this weekend?
Yeah, I think because of the speed of the track kind of scared them a bit. They didn't want to go off like they did at Winton. But I mean, there was a bit of bissing and barging. There was some good hard racing, but no real carnage. You know, a few offs. There was more action in the support category. One car rolled three times, just hit the sand pit and dug in. So everybody was going, whoa, whoa, whoa. But the supercars, no, nothing like that.
And there was continuing controversy over the previous rounds about the effect of the reverse grid and how that determines the starting positions for the final race. Did that come into play today?
It came into favour more than, like, Simon Wills, right, he had some problems in qualifying. In fact, he didn't even qualify. And he started on the back of the grid. Now, in the first race, he finished, I think it was eighth or ninth. So that basically put him on the front row or the second row of the grid for the reverse race. So he won the second race, and he just won the third race. I mean, the standout this weekend, even though the winner was Parsons, and then followed by Wills, then Leanne Ferrier, then Dumbrell. Now the standout was young Dumbrell. He qualified on pole. Right, did a bit of a faux pas in the first race and then finished mid-pack or whatever, but then second race he did really well. He's finished in a second or third, and then in the third race he was like half a second quicker than anybody else in the whole race, and he lost, well, he didn't lose, he came second. Well, Wills won by 0.0056 of a second. It was that close. And Dumbrell was just like, he was just reeling them in. It was just great to watch.
Yeah, it doesn't get much closer than that.
Definitely doesn't.
And V8 Supergirl, Leanne Ferrier, seemed to figure in the results. What sort of a weekend did she have?
Well, she had a really good day. She was pretty consistent. She kept the nose out of trouble, but she raced pretty hard. There was a few biffing and barging. She was giving it as good as she got, so to speak. And, she's basically kept the nose out of trouble and stayed on the track, and look where she was. I mean, Dumbrell was trying to race for the win, because he had to win to get on the podium, because Leanne, at the end of the day, Leanne had the points, and she finished third. This is between third and fourth on the day, was 2 points, so Dumbrell was really going for the win in that last race.
One of the drivers who had a bit of a shocker at Winton was Michael Simpson. He was caught up in that accident early in the race, and his car was out of action, but he was very kindly lent a car this weekend. How did he go in the Castrol Falcon?
Well, the first race he did fantastic. In the second race, he was back up there again, and he was actually, on course for the podium, if not a win on the day, and because he was doing really well in a very unfamiliar car to him, and he's obviously, this guy's got a little bit of talent, and but the car, the engine or something, there was smoke coming out of it, and oil lines let go. He didn't finish the second race, and they didn't even get out in time for the third race, so that was the end of his weekend. But he's definitely a guy to keep an eye on.
Oh, that's a bit of a pity, but it sounds like a great weekend's racing there from Phillip Island. So now for the V8 fans, the next race is, of course, Canberra, and there's something on the shelves at the moment that may help fans gear up for that. Can you tell us about the latest issue of V8X?
Well, in V8X, we actually went to Canberra and we talked to a few people at Canberra, basically the good people that are putting on the event, and we're talking about how what it's like for a street race, and then particularly with Canberra, what it's like to put on a street race. What do they got to go through? And in Canberra, you're special, you guys. You've got to deal with two governments to put on a street race in Canberra. So we thought, there's a story for V8X in itself. And then we've got a preview on Canberra and basically lots of photographs. And just, you know, Canberra is going to be, it's one of the jewels in the crown for a V8 supercar. And we just, you know, hey, it's our preview issue. It's the GMC 400 preview issue. Get your butts to Canberra because it's going to be great.
Yeah, some very comprehensive coverage there. And, well done to your guys for such a good coverage of that type of stuff. Neville Wilkinson, thanks very much for once again. And we'll catch up to you probably here in Canberra.
It's been a pleasure.
David Coulthard has set his Wes McLaren on pole position for tonight's Monaco Formula One Grand Prix. He had not been showing that sort of speed and form in any of his previous laps on the Monaco circuit, which prompted the question during debriefing, David, were you sandbagging?
No, not at all. No, I made a mistake on Thursday, by touching the barrier at the back, and I lost a bit of time in that second session, and also it takes your confidence away a bit because you just can't afford to hit a barrier. And then just trying to play catch up thereafter. I went into qualifying. I said to my engineers that I hadn't actually completed the last sector quickly at any point during this weekend. So it was going to be interesting in qualifying, and I overdid it on one lap, but all the rest were pretty tidy, and the lap time came from there.
You've actually beaten the all-time best lap round here, which was set in 1997 by 0.8 of a second. What's it like to drive these new cars, traction control and those sort of things?
It's very difficult because where it helps you in some areas, it puts you, you know, arriving at the corners a lot faster. So, the cars are still tricky to drive. And yeah, I think, to be honest though, in qualifying, I'm not sure whether it actually gives you that much over the lap because of the fresh tyres. But I think it probably makes you more consistent and probably safer in race conditions.
That is. Mika, right up to the end, it looked like you'd be getting pole, but it seemed to go wrong in that last run. What happened?
Well, we made a small change to the car, and I was not probably 100% sure at the moment was it the right thing to do, but you have to try, because the times are so close anyway, and Michael was that time on quickest, so we need to try to do something extra. And let's say it worked quite well half the lap, but then when I end up in the last sector, really, I just got quite a big understeer in second last corner, and couldn't get the front end of grip, and so lost a couple of tenths. So that's it. The same, we didn't get the front row for the McLaren for this Grand Prix.
However, you have had more time on the track than David, so do you feel you have a very good race setup?
I'm confident, indeed. I think we have both cars have a very good race setup at the moment, and we can be very optimistic for tomorrow's Grand Prix. I believe we're going to be very consistent and very quick as long as we are patient.
That's okay. David, both with your own personal hat and also with the GPDA side of yourself, I mean, will you be using launch control and will everyone else be using launch control after the problems we've seen in the last couple of races?
Well, obviously I don't know about the other systems on our cars, but I think we're satisfied that we've managed to get the bugs out of the system, and I think it was a very good move by Charlie Whiting and those running the weekend to allow us all to do practice starts, because it takes away that uncertainty. So I think it's great that Formula One's able to be adaptable to the situations and to go outside the timings to allow everyone to get their confidence in the systems.
Of course, Michael Schumacher was trapped out on the circuit after the qualifying session and was not able to make it into that press conference. But you can be assured he will feature in tonight's race, which starts in just a little over 2 hours' time.
In the European Le Mans Series news, the Salzburgring round of that championship has been cancelled just over 2 months before it was scheduled to take place. The Austrian event, scheduled for the 3rd to 5th of August, has been removed from the calendar due to the circuit's inability to comply with FIA safety requirements, according to the championship organisers.
In a recent statement, John McDonald, who's the executive director of the ELMS, said that they were very disappointed to be making this announcement now, but were only recently made aware of the situation. The FIA had been in contact with the Salisbury Ring management, and unfortunately there isn't time for the circuit to make the required safety changes prior to the race. The ELMS series organisers recognised the impact that the schedule change had on all the series participants, but the safety of competitors was being a top priority. Several European tracks are currently being consulted with the intention of replacing the Salisbury Ring event with a high-quality venue on the same weekend. And as it is, the event organisers are hoping that things can work out. A few problems there for the American Le Mans series. As it was also last weekend, they were running a round of the FIR Sports Car Championship, and it was French sports car ace Jean-Marc Gounon who made a triumphant return to the series after a two-year layoff. And he headed up as well a Ferrari 1-2 for the BMS Scuderia Italia team in their Ferrari 333 SPs. He led a flag to finish sort of arrangement there. As it was, a lot of the main rivals fell by the wayside one by one, while the two Scuderia Italia cars ran like clockwork. Gounon took over third place at the halfway point from co-driver Marco Zadra, who'd been delayed by 20 seconds by a clash while lapping Peter Owens Reynard. He then passed Lillian Berner's sister car and immediately began closing the 40-second gap to Japanese driver Hiroki Kato in the RS Motorsport Dame Judd S101, which had led from the beginning. Despite it being his first ever race in a 333SP, the hard-charging Gounon began to catch Kato at over 3 seconds per lap, and a grandstand finish was in the offing. But the Dame then suffered a rear damper breakage and had to stop to get it fixed, eventually dropping down to 10th. With the Dame's demise, it was plain sailing to the flag for the Frenchman to score the team's second win of the year, and in the process promoting Marco Zadra into the championship lead. Third place in the race eventually went to the second Dame of the Racing for Holland team. Team boss Jan Lammers has started from the back of the grid after the car stalled on the grid and was hampered by picking up debris on his tyres. But young Dutch co-driver Val Hillebrand used a different line to lap rapidly and tie up the car's second and third place in as many races. The British Ascari team was fourth with Ben Collins and Wernis Lutberger, a result which might have been much better had a piece of debris not punctured a hole in the front splitter, ruining the handling of the car and causing a 1 minute delay at the first pit stop. In the SR2 class, Massimo Monti and Renato Nibali took an excellent win in their BM Autosport Tempoli Alpha. Monti had made all the early running, and when Martin O'Connell's Rowan Pilbeam retired with engine problems, the main opposition was limited to the works Lucchini of Filippi Francioni and Raffaele Raimondi. The latter held the lead towards the end, but Nibali caught and passed him with 15 laps remaining to take the win. That race over 64 laps at the Spa-Francorchamps circuit. I reckon that'll be a very interesting circuit to go around in. And of course, they've got the Spa 24 hours for production cars, super production cars, later in the year, and it's going to be interesting to see the sort of grid they get for that, normally somewhere in around about 100 cars, but not as big as the 200 odd cars that qualify for the Nürburgring 24 hours, which is on this weekend.
And of course, we'll have more from Spa-Francorchamps and the Nürburgring as we get information coming to hand. Still to come on the show, we look at the British Touring Car Championship, the German Touring Car Championship. We'll catch up with all the news with PRN's Garage Pass, and we'll have a look at some of the goings on in Australian motorsport as well. This is Inside Motorsport on 103.9 Triple S FM.
Got a message?
Need to be heard.
Why not tell Canberra on Triple S FM? If you're a community group or non-profit organisation
with an upcoming event you'd like to promote,
contact the team at Triple S to air your community announcement.
Let us know 2 weeks in advance of your event by faxing us on 624-7706.
Or email us on sss@acttab.com.au.
Or just give us a call on 625-7248. 103.9 Triple S FM, working to support your community.
Kickstart your sporting Sunday morning with Jeff Adams and Craig Gravel on The Good Sports. Cram your morning from 6 to 9, starting with the latest news from the BBC Sports Newsroom, followed by an onslaught of local and national sport. Start your week with all the sporting news on Canberra's only sport and racing station, Triple S FM.
And don't forget, next Sunday morning we'll have coverage, delayed coverage, of the 2001 Indianapolis 500 here on The Good Sports.
And in the lead up to the GMC 400 events to take place on the June long weekend here in Canberra. The road closures for the GMC 400, which affects roads in the Parkes, Yarralumla, Barton and Kingston districts of Canberra, will take effect from midnight Friday the 1st of June 2001 to 6pm on Monday the 11th of June. The roads will reopen on Monday 11th of June at 6pm. Advisory signs have already been posted on many of the affected roads prior to the closure, and overnight on 1 June detour signs will be installed. A number of roads will be closed for the construction of the temporary racing circuit around Canberra's Parliamentary Triangle, including Flynn Drive and Flynn Place between State Circle and King Edward Terrace, Langton Crescent between King Edward Terrace and Queen Victoria Terrace between Commonwealth Avenue and Kings Avenue between National Circuit and State Circle between Kings Avenue and Flynn Drive. A number of surrounding roads will also be closed to varying degrees to allow for the track works and also runoff areas, etc. So if anybody is running around the Canberra region currently, you'll see that the road works, the grandstands, the barriers and everything for the GMC 400 are rapidly going up, and I must admit a lot of work going on around the place, and that should make it a big build-up for this rather major event for motor racing in the national capital, and certainly a lot of work being put in this year to improve a number of features of the race that drivers looking for, improving some of the overtaking opportunities on Flynn Lane and various other places. They've actually done a fair bit of resurfacing of the track area, particularly around Queen Victoria Terrace, around the National Archives of Australia, building the back of that area there between Old Parliament House and the Archives. Beautiful new surface laid down there, and a few of the areas, particularly running around the lake behind the back of the Hyatt Hotel, Albert Hall area there, a bit of work being done there as well. But things looking good, a lot of work going on, as I say. So people, if you are driving around Canberra, just be aware of it and the fact that after the 1st of June, there will be some traffic changes and you know, something to put up with for a short time for what is a fairly major event here in Canberra.
Max Mosley, President of Motorsport's governing body, the FIA, has warned Formula One not to underestimate the power of the engine manufacturers involved in the sport. As the debate over pay-per-view Grand Prix and the threat of a rival series to Formula One continues. But he also played down the fears of a breakaway series, saying he hoped a compromise deal would be struck to prevent the sport's premier championship breaking up. And yes, that really would be a pity. And they have got a few years still to work it out. All of the big manufacturers are still tied in for a few years yet in the current rules for Formula One.
In British Touring Car Championship news, Ivan Muller enjoyed a perfect weekend and strengthened his title position for the AA.com British Touring Car Championship with two wins at the Alton Park round of the championship last weekend. But it was a day of disappointment for his Vauxhall teammate, Jason Plato, whose retirement from the feature race with clutch problems handed the championship lead to his teammate Muller. Starting from pole, Muller narrowly held on to his advantage at the first corner of the main event, keeping Plato just behind. Egg Sport Vauxhall driver Phil Bennett's challenge for a podium position was scuppered on lap 2 when he slid off at the second corner and rejoined the race in last. His Egg Sport teammate James Thompson became the first of the touring class racers to make their mandatory pit stop on lap 7, swiftly followed by Muller and Plato. Fast work by the Vauxhall team allowed Thompson to take the lead during the stops, but it was short-lived as Muller stole the advantage after Plato ran wide at the hairpin. Bennett's afternoon went from bad to worse. He was forced in the pits with a damaged tyre before retiring his Astra on lap 23. Former champion Tim Harvey briefly led the race before being overtaken by Muller, and then steering problems ended Plato's determined pursuit of Muller on lap 26. And it was other drivers' misfortunes which benefited privateer Alfa Romeo driver Harvey, who took third place well adrift of Muller and Thompson in second. Earlier, Roger Moen, a Peugeot 306, had triumphed in the sprint race to record the first overall win in the championship for a production class car. The touring class Vauxhalls were unable to overcome the one lap start given to production class machines as Muller won the class. Plato endured a terrible start after clutch problems and at one stage slumped to ninth. He then made good progress, but despite quickly establishing himself in third, could not reel in second place Thompson. The touring class stars made easy progress through the slower production cars, but did not have sufficient laps to challenge Moen as Muller triumphed ahead of Thompson. Plato has slipped to third in the championship behind Thompson on 70 points and new leader Muller, who had 82. The finishing order of the BTC production sprint race at Alton Park was then turned on its head when race winner Roger Moen and second place Gavin Piper were both given 10-second penalties for over-aggressive driving tactics in the race in which they both finished at the head of the field. That gave Moen's HTML teammate Simon Harrison in a Peugeot 306 the victory, ahead of James Kay in a Honda Accord, with Moen then sitting in third, Gareth Howell in Ford Focus fourth, and Piper in Alfa Romeo 156 in fifth. So things look interesting there for the British Touring Car Championship. A lot of things happening there. Muller now leading the championship on 82 points, with Thompson in second place on 70, Plato in third on 68, Bennett in fourth on 46, Eve in fifth with 21, Steve Soper sitting down in sixth place with only 19 points, Kurt Levy in seventh with 17, and Tim Harvey in eighth with 16 points. Matt Neal, from his one appearance, sitting in ninth on 11 points, and Dave Pinkney in tenth with 6 points. In the production class, it's Harrison in first with 59, Kay in second with 52, Piper in third with 42, Moen in fourth with 41, Jackson in fifth with 36, and Howell in sixth with 34. In news rounding up things for the British Touring Car Championship, the Mondello Park round of the BTCC has been given the thumbs up by series boss Richard West for the championship's first foray to Ireland on June the 16th and 17th. There are a number of specific tasks to be completed before the race takes place, but the teams and organisers are expecting some great racing there. And the second ABG Motorsport Lexus IS 200 won't appear in the BTCC until Donington Park on 1 July at the earliest. Brazilian driver Thomas Erdos will drive the car as planned when it is ready for use.
Colin, going from the BTCC to, well, the kart stars, of course, unearthing the next generation of motorsport has been something that Ford have put high on their agenda. This year, they once again sponsor the Kart Star Series. Joining us on the line is Matt Adams, who was at Coffs Harbour today, where round number one kicked off. And firstly, Matt, you might be able to explain to us the Ford Kart Stars Series, which was formerly the Ford Max Challenge. How does that differ to other karting events throughout Australia?
Yeah, thanks. Well, the Ford Kart Stars Series differs in the fact that it is the only series that's actually promoted and supported by a major industry in Australia, which for us is the Ford Motor Company. The series is designed using the Control Arrow chassis, which is an Australian chassis, so all the drivers have to use the same kart, same protect engines and the same Bridgestone tyres. So to get a level playing field, and Ford's idea is that by using drivers a limit to the equipment.
And of course, the beauty of mobile phones and travelling from an area that doesn't have a lot of coverage is that you eventually lose the signal. So our apologies there. We will try and get a hold of Matt in just a few moments and try to get some of the results from the Ford Kart Stars Championship round number one, of course, held up at Coffs Harbour today. Jeff Green, yesterday won the Charlotte round of the Bush Grand National Championship. Of course, Jeff Green being the defending champion of the Bush Series, he put on a fantastic job to win by less than half a car length after 300 miles to Matt Kenseth in the Visine number 17 car. Of course, the Nestwick car and team put on a fantastic drive, really dominated the late part of the race, although the race itself was dominated for the most part by the former team that was driven for by Mark Martin, a very dominating driver, in fact the most winningest driver in Bush Grand National competition. And that is, of course, driven by Greg Bickle. And Bickle had, the most laps led. At 105 laps into the race, he had actually led the most laps of the race and got the 5 points for that achievement. But unfortunately, a tyre pressure adjustment late in the race saw him, well, face an early demise, and that was all she wrote. Points leader Kevin Harvick, well, started off the pole because practice and qualifying was washed out for the Bush Grand National Division, and he soon had a good day turn bad when problems beset the Harvick team, going 5 laps down in the pits, managing to make 3 of those laps back on the track, but unfortunately he was stuck down in 28th position, eventually 2 laps down. Other notable runners were short and far between because the men out in front really had a dominating run. But last weekend's winner at Nazareth, Pennsylvania, Jason Kelleher, was also up there in 4th position. The championship points now, it's Bickle back on top by 19 from Harvick, Then it's further down to Green. Keller are the really the only four still with a real shot at taking out this year's Bush Grand National Championship. And, of course, the Bush racing on the bigger tracks is really quite different to what you get to see on the NASCAR circuit, where they really freight train up.
And, of course, the NASCAR providing fantastic racing yet again, with so many different winners and a lot of variety there. And, of course, Dale Jarrett on top, so Ford fans are pretty happy with that. But, of course, he's been a bit hit and miss with the many things. So what we might do now is cross to our good friends from the PRN radio network to get their garage pass report.
Ryan leaves them crying.
To be able to have the phone here is just great.
I'm Mark Darrow with the latest from the Lowe's Motor Speedway, where rain is still a pain.
PRN's Garage Pass, brought to you by Team Monte Carlo, Chevy, the car's more champions depend on 11,987 patches of rubber.
And Team Monte Carlo captured Talladega.
481 checkered flags.
That's number 50 for Gordon.
17 Manufacturers Championship. One team, Team Monte Carlo. The team with the winningest car in NASCAR Winston Cup history.
Woo! They're going to be tough to beat.
Monte Carlo, the cars more champions depend on. Chevy, we'll be there.
Ricky Craven, I guess when you hit that brake pedal, you've got to have a lot of faith in those brake pads.
You've got to be able to race with authority and know that everything underneath you is the very best. And with performance friction, it's never a question.
What about the brakes on your family car?
My wife says they're quieter. And if they're quieter, then it's peace of mind. And my children are more important to me than any one of those 15 race cars I have.
Performance Friction Carbon Metallic, available at AutoZone.
For the second straight year, a rookie is nailed down the pole position for the Coca-Cola 600 here at the Lowe's Motor Speedway in Charlotte. At 185.217 miles per hour, Ryan Newman was fast enough to beat out Jeff Gordon. This is the same Alltel Ford Newman outclassed the field with in last weekend's All-Star Race prelim, until the engine let go.
If we can be as fast as we were compared to everybody else in that Winston Open, I think we'll be pretty good, but we got to last 600 miles.
Newman set a modern-era record dating back to 1972, in capturing his first Winston Cup pole and only his third try. Todd Bodine will take the green third, with Bill Elliott and Jimmy Spencer rounding out the top five. 6-10, Kevin Harvick, Mike Skinner, Johnny Benson, Ward Burton, and Mark Martin. Point leader Dale Jarrett crashed in qualifying and had to go to the big brown truck and roll out a backup. Typical of his luck lately over the last three races, a sizable lead in the championship chase has been cut to only 14 points over Gordon.
In a 36 race season, you're going to have ups and downs, and you know, you'd like to think we could be near perfect every week, but you can't do that.
Rain caused several delays during the Coca-Cola 600 qualifying and completely washed it out for Saturday's Busch Series CarQuest Auto Parts 300. Field has now been set by points, putting Kevin Harvick on the point, with Jeff Green, Greg Biffle, Jason Keller, and Mike McLaughlin next on the grid. Subbing for Joe Nemechek, Dale Earnhardt Jr. will start 33rd. It's being reported that Nemechek could now miss up to 6 weeks following the practice crash at Dover 10 days ago. And before the pit stop, during the qualifying rain delay, Terry Labonte actually jumped in his younger racing sibling's helicopter, flew up to his daughter Kristen's graduation in Trinity, North Carolina, and then back in time to time trial. We asked Brother Bobby if it was just another example of brotherly love.
He just told me what I was going to do, so it really worked out good.
Kind of makes you misty. Back after this.
Your membership is waiting at one of the most exclusive clubs in motorsports. A lifetime membership to the Speedway Club at Lowe's Motor Speedway Charlotte. Season tickets to at least 5 NASCAR events at Lowe's Motor Speedway. Activate your membership now before the action begins. Call the Speedway Club at Lowe's Motor Speedway to schedule your personal tour. 704-455-3240. That's 704-455-3240. Or visit our website at gospeedwayclub.com.
This is Bill Elliott. You're listening to PRN's Garage Pass.
Speedway Records presents an exciting new racing CD, Thunder Road, featuring the unmistakable sound of the Charlie Daniels Band.
Here is Thunder, Thunder Road.
Also featuring the Marshall Tucker Band in the Atlanta Rhythm Section, comedian Tim Wilson, and introducing Tralina and her tribute to Dale Earnhardt.
The last one to drive number
two. Own your own copy of Thunder Road just by calling 1-800-716-2722 or check out Thunder Road at SpeedwayRecords.com.
The only person now who can stop Tony Stewart from running both the Indy 500 and the Coca-Cola 600 Sunday is Mother Nature. He'll have only 35 minutes to spare getting back to North Carolina, a mere 20, if he wins, which Tony says doesn't bother him a bit.
Well, look at it. The faster I go, the less time it's going to take. So if I can get to the checkered flag before anybody else and do it pretty quick, I won't have to worry about what time it is.
As a reminder, PRN's live coverage of the CarQuest Auto Parts 300 will begin at 12:15 Eastern Time on Saturday. Sunday's Coca-Cola 600 at 4:45 Eastern. And that's it for now. I'm Mark Guerra.
PRN's Garage Pass, brought to you by Performance Friction. Truth is, virtually everyone in racing uses Performance Friction brakes. And X1R. Bottom line, it works.
Yes, you've got to love those American ads. They really tug at the heartstrings, some of them, don't they? And it's probably a good time now to catch up with the standings in the NASCAR Winston Cup Championship. After 11 races out of 36 this year, we have had 9 different winners. And Dale Jarrett's the only guy who's been able to stick more than one together. He's had 3 victories, and that puts him top of the tree. Yes, Dale Jarrett has 1,559 points, and he's had 5 top 5s, 6 top 10s, and that probably puts him ahead of Jeff Gordon. Jeff Gordon on 1545, who's been a little bit more consistent, being in the top fives and top tens a little bit more. Rusty Wallace is in third with 1497. Johnny Benson, 1480. Sterling Marlin, 1421. Ricky Rudd, 1411. In seventh at Stephen Park with 1387. Tony Stewart putting on his big double today, hopefully, on 1387. Bobby Hamilton in ninth at 1309, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. rounds out the top 10 with 1302. But let's have a look throughout the rest of the standings to find out some notable names. Down in 12th is rookie Kevin Harvick. The replacement for Dale Earnhardt is on 1204 points. Last year's champion Bobby Hamilton way down in 13th, which is very disappointing for him. Know some people out there love to follow Jeremy Mayfield. He's quite disappointing, down in 24th and only 1,046 points. But also way down in the doldrums is Michael Waltrip, the winner of the Daytona 500 at the start of the year. He only has 1,007 points. So that really brings us up to date now in the Winston Cup Championship. And of course we'll keep you up to date on many, many rounds this year. And tonight we'll be watching with interest for the Coca-Cola 600 from Charlotte.
Your tip for that one?
It's going to be a tough one for Dale Jarrett. He had the accident in practice and qualifying, so he's used a provisional, so he starts from pretty much the back of the grid. So that makes it pretty tough for him. But you know me, I'll cheer for him anyway. 600 miles is an awful long way. I think he's still a chance even from the back. Tony Stewart, I don't think he's going to figure much in the NASCAR race. He's quite frankly going to be quite tired and buggered. I think he'll be lucky to make the race, lucky to finish it too.
Well, I think Dodge are finally going to break the ice and take a win. And I'm not going to put my money on who it is, but Brian Newman had the Winston Open shot to pieces. And if he has got anything like the car he had at the Winston Open up until it blew up, he's going to be hard to toss.
But how can the Dodgers figure too much in this race when half of them didn't qualify?
It is a problem, isn't it? When you go to Charlotte, you want to be on the pace because everyone races at Charlotte.
Yep, that's right. Oh, it'll be fun to watch.
It was an interesting stat that I heard too, going back to the Busch Grand National. They said that they had only turned away about 13 cars this year in Busch Grand National competition. At the same time last year, they turned away 100 and something cars. So it goes to show that even the Busch Grand National and NASCAR are getting a few problems getting the numbers that they once had experienced. And the sooner that these fools at Avesco don't rationalise what they're trying to do with their preliminary events and get them on the Saturday card rather than this whole fiasco of having separate race meetings, I don't know when they'll wise up to that.
Yeah,
but it's got to be costing them money to put them on like that.
Yeah, that's right. I think that we've seen so many times in the past that motorsport really booms when the economy is strong, but it's one of the first things to suffer when the economy slows down a little bit. And yeah, it's times like now that people really have to start thinking about consolidating, rationalising, and making sure you still have a real leading product for the fans. Because we saw it up there at Eastern Creek. The V8s were the headline act, and there was not a whole lot of depth in the rest of the program. Some of the club racing, as good as it is, really isn't the full program for $40 or $50 for your paying spectators to fork out. You need a full program of top-notch stuff.
Hmm. And that's what was the success of course, Wakefield Park, which we have continued to harp on about here on the show. We'll stop harping.
In World Rally Championship news, manufacturers in that championship will be forced to make a Formula One style commitment to the championship and contest every event on the calendar under new rules. Under the outcome of a meeting of the World Rally Championship Commission last week, any new marks joining the championship will be expected to contest every round in its first year or it won't be eligible for points. It was also decided that the two highest placed manufacturer drivers, as opposed to the current nominated driver system, would be eligible to score manufacturer's championship points, which should encourage teams to run three cars. The FIA is keen to limit each manufacturer to three cars in the championship, although the third machine from each team is likely to be powered by specialist drivers, such as, in the Peugeot's case, their asphalt wizard, Gilles Panizzi. The rule is described as a bit of a compromise, and I'd say that we're probably going to see some interesting things coming about for next season with those changes to the rules. Very interesting as well to consider the fact that some of the teams have only been running two cars. This will encourage people like Honda, etc., to run a third car in each round of the championship, and that means they'll have a bigger grid and deeper field throughout the rallies, because some of the rallies, by the time they get round to day three, looking a little bit thin. So it'll be good to see for the World Rally Championship.
We've still got plenty more to come here on Inside Motorsport. I hope you can stay with us.
If you missed the latest race results, take advantage of ACTAB InfoLine.
You'll need to call 6245 1185. For race meetings and result summaries, call 6245 1186. ACTAB's racing information lines. Call 6245 1185 and 6245 1186. ACTAB and Triple S, making betting easier.
If a man is hungry, give him food to eat. If a stranger thirsty, give him drink. If a woman's battered, if a child's abandoned, bring him in.
The Salvos Never Give Up Caring. Please give to the Salvation Army Red Shield Appeal the 26th and 27th of May. Call 133230 with your donation. Thank God for the Salvos.
Plenty at the fifth round of the FIA GT Championship at Zolder, Belgium last weekend. As it was, everybody thought that the Lister Storm of Jamie Campbell-Walter and Tom Coronel had made a sensational finish with a lead change in the final 100 yards of the race in the final corner. But as it was, the Lister car was disqualified after the event in post-race scrutineering. The car was having a vacuum test for its engine's airbox, and was found that the airbox was leaking air. This would allow more power to the engine as air would circumnavigate the car's air restrictors, which are used to limit the potential for the sports car's output. Lister, however, is appealing against the decision, and it says the airbox was damaged during the race, which had caused a small leak, which had actually made the engine run lean and create a misfire which could be heard by people in the pit lane in the closing stages of the race. As it is, the Chrysler Viper of Le Bar was declared the race winner until the appeal has been heard, and as it is, Le Bar also leads the series. The winning team of the NGT class was also penalised when their driver Luca Riccatelli drove over his allowed maximum time in the RWS Motorsport Porsche 996 GT3 before he handed over to his teammate Andrea Baldrini. The car received a 1 minute 44 second penalty, which dropped him to third in the class, which then moved the win onto another Porsche 996 GT3, that being the car of Babini and Makisha. So lots of excitement there, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the appeal by the Lister Storm people about that airbox problem. But apparently they had problems even with fuel pressure early in the race, so for them to work their way back to a win and then have it taken away in post-race scrutineering, I think they would not be very happy.
No, and we've been seeing a lot of those sort of decisions happening lately, with decisions off the track making the final results that little bit different than what their on-track performance have been doing. And I know it's a craw in your side, isn't it? The stewards and their decisions.
Absolutely. I think there's nothing worse than things being decided in the stewards' room. I think that we just have to look at the 12-metre sailing, America's Cup type of stuff. They sort of had that problem many years ago, and they've really turned to a program now when if you have something to grumble about, you protest during the race, and that way the stewards can act immediately and make the necessary adjustments. and that way it doesn't really affect the perceived outcome of the race. Justice is seen to be swift and immediate, and then you can get on with racing. However, that really leads into the issue now about the new focus on the clean racing in the V8 Touring Car Championship, and whether the stewards have gone full circle and now they're being too tough. So, Craig, I welcome your thoughts here about a series that you probably be quite an interesting cynic to talk about. Has the stewards and their new focus on clean racing made it too clean, too boring?
Well, the series you're talking about I haven't watched, so I can't really venture a comment with you. But I do know, in of course, open wheel racing, you can't afford that sort of crap, because the cars will flip into the air if they touch wheels. In touring car racing, I guess the British Touring Car Championship and NASCAR have shown all too well that rubbing is racing, and with that, it makes for a much better program. Now, we're linking back up with a man that we lost a little bit earlier today, and of course, that was Matthew Adams. And Matthew, we're talking about the Kart Stars program, and you're mentioning that it is Drew Price Engineering chassis with the Rotex Match 125 engines. But perhaps with the control tyre, another Bridgestone control tyre series, I should add.
Yep.
And it's interesting what's going to happen there, because Bridgestone is Firestone, and Ford don't deal with Firestone anymore. So maybe you'll be changing tyres midway through the championship, I don't know. But of course, at Coffs Harbour today, the racing was on, and I was hoping you might be able to give us a rundown on how everything progressed.
Yeah, it turned out really good, actually. I mean, we had a fair few guys that had done the series before. We had one of the favourites, Mark Winterbottom. He actually was looking very strong, but the man to beat for virtually the whole weekend was a young guy from Newcastle by the name of Chris Cox. He is a series newcomer, so it was his first race meeting, and basically he hadn't done any racing in these sort of cars before, but he was able to come out and put it on pole position in time trials yesterday by overspeed.
You've got to love mobile phones, don't you? Matt, if you're there, I thought we might also mention that whilst the entry fee to join the series is $16,500, it has got prize money in excess of $14,000 that you can recoup, and also a opportunity to drive in Formula Ford with a guaranteed drive for the champion of the series.
Yes, well, I mean, that's probably the biggest carrot is the Formula Ford Series drive. Young Michael has been the back from the last and I mean, Ford are looking at it as a training ground, and they'll be supporting Caruso and anyone from this year that gets through to that up into further motorsport, whether it's V8 supercars here in Australia or part of their Ford program overseas.
And of course, for people who are karting fans, because karting does put on some fantastic spectator racing, where rubbing is racing and also hard passing is also part of the game, SBS are going to be putting it in part of, I would imagine, the Speed Week program.
Yes, it's in 2 weeks' time, so that should be in 2 Sundays' time. And we've got a 1 hour feature program on Foxtel at the end of the series. So basically, 2 weeks after each round, we'll have that 7 minutes on SBS on Sunday afternoon, and then at the end of the series, the Foxtel Hour.
And of course, races next round at the end of June is at Newcastle. You head down to Geelong at the end of July.
Yep.
Go up for a day-night event. That's going to be a great one for the competitors. A day-night event in conjunction with the Queensland 500.
Yeah, I think that'll be probably the biggest publicity spin that the series has seen so far. To be racing A, under lights, and B, on the same weekend as the touring cars, should be really good, should attract some big crowds, and of course we don't charge the spectators to get in, so anyone can come and have a look, and I think that they'll have a lot of V8 supercar stars having a look at that one as well.
And of course the grand final is in October at Todd Road in Melbourne.
Yeah, well, that's right in the heart of Melbourne, and you can actually see the cityscape from the track there. And that will be the grand final, and hopefully it'll come down to a really close race. And from there, the top six drivers will go into the Formula Ford testing with Ford to gain those valuable Formula Ford drives.
And we might just recap the points after round one. How do they stand?
Yeah, well, Chris Cox is on top of the points chart. Mark Winterbottom is second, and William Yarwood is third. Cox is from New South Wales. Winterbottom's also from New South Wales, and Yarwood is from Queensland.
For karting fans, 2 weeks' time on SBS, you can catch up with all the action from the 2001 Ford Kart Stars. Of course, it was formerly known as the Rotex Max Challenge. Matt Adams, thanks very much. We look forward to catching up with you after each and every round of the Ford Stars.
Thanks for your time.
The latest round of the DTM, the German Touring Car Championship, was held at Oschersleben last weekend, and it was Mercedes youngster Marcel Fassler who led from lights to flag and pocketed the 3 points on offer as he won his first ever DTM race in the 9-lap grid deciding sprint at Oschersleben. With only one place change among the top 10 in a rather uninspiring 9-lap thrash, the grid for the big points pit stop race, which is the feature race, remained largely as it had been for Saturday qualifying. Lauren Ayler's Audi finished second in the sprint race ahead of the Mercedes trio of Bernd Schneider, Uwe Alzen and Peter Dumbrick, with Matthias Ekstrom's Audi completing the top six. And no Opel Astras in the top 10 for the sprint race. But in the main race, it was Marcel Fassler who came through to win again, withstanding intense pressure from Bernd Schneider. And it was two wins in the time in that race winning for the Mercedes driver. After staying from pole position following his win in the sprint race, a mid-race mistake by Fassler nearly cost him the victory, but he worked his way back to win from Schneider, while Uwe Alzen took third with Peter Dumbrick fourth to make it a Mercedes top four. Fassler led from the start and immediately began to build a lead while the rest of the field got itself into order. Schneider made a poor start in the first race by moving into second ahead of Laurent Ayler's Audi TTR, and the Frenchman was then taken by Alzen and dropped to fifth. Fassler began to stretch the legs of his Mercedes and looked to be in a fairly commanding position as the mandatory pit stop loomed. However, on the eighth lap, the young Swiss driver outbraked himself at the back chicane, which allowed Schneider to close and pass him. The stops beyond the 10th lap and some sharp pit work on lap 12 from Fassler's HWA team crew put him back in front. And as it was, the reigning champion Schneider then came out behind the young Swiss driver and as try as he might could not find a way past. An uncharacteristic mistake from Schneider on the very last lap saw the lead D2 Mercedes CLK run wide on to the back straight and the German had to settle for second. Schneider's teammate, Peter Dumbrick, was struggling on the twisty Oschersleben circuit from fifth on the grid and had a clash with Alzen on the very first lap. Dumbrick found himself in a battle with Laurent Aiello and Alzen after the pit stops, and while the Audi did not pose too many problems, Alzen pushed his way past, leaving Dumbrick to finish fourth. Behind Aiello in the lead Audi in fifth came teammates Christian Abt in sixth and Matthias Ekstrom in seventh. The Audis continued to harass the Mercedes and despite showing impressive qualifying pace, had taken a wrong turn in their race setup, which did not make them as competitive during the race. Opel continued to struggle and Timo Scheider was the highest placed Astra V8 Coupe runner in 12th place behind two 2000 specification Mercedes. Fassler's win moves him into second place in the championship behind Schneider, with Aiello hanging on in third and Dumbrick in fourth. And there's now a 4 week break in the championship before the teams head to the Sachsenring. So in the sprint race, it was Fassler in Mercedes CLK ahead of Bernd Schneider and another Mercedes CLK, Uwe Alzen in another Mercedes CLK, then Peter Dumbrick in another Mercedes CLK, Laurent Aiello in fifth, the first of the Audi runners rounding up the fifth positions there. And again, Fassler winning from Schneider. So interesting racing for the DTM. And apparently that has been shown on Fox Sport, I believe, so a place to look for that if you're looking for it.
And, of course, one other bugbear that's come up, and we've seen in all the Touring Car Championships of late that they've got manufactured pit stops. DTM does it. BTCC has now got in their long race, because they've got Super Production and Touring Cars in there together. They actually are running a series where the Super Production cars do less laps, and the Touring cars have to do two pit stops. Now, quite obviously, if you're manufacturing pit stops to make your event exciting, then perhaps you haven't got much of an event.
Harsh words, particularly when it's, as you've just said, Craig, that so many series are doing it. And it's not just the sedan racing. We just look to the top of the tree, Formula One. Of course, they reverted back to pit stops when they were not required, and everyone screamed about the safety concerns and the refueling under the beer keg with the pressure and everything to make it faster. I think that if you look at Formula One recently, okay, not the last couple of months, but all of last year, if you didn't have the pit stops, by crikey, it would have been even more boring.
Yes, but at the same time, if you didn't have the pit stops, if someone decided to take a pit stop, they would have gained such a large advantage on the track with tyre grip that it became a necessary evil. They sort of rewrote the rules to make the pit stops not mandatory but advantageous, because you could go 2 seconds a lap quicker with new tyres, so therefore that was an advantage to you. Because the time you lost in the pit, you made up instantly on the racetrack.
Yeah, I think that's the key. It needs to be a flavour of racing where the strategy of the new tyres, the fuel load and the weight penalties there, that having a pit stop actually makes it interesting. And therefore the pit stop strategy, whether it's one stop or two or three, really comes into play. And really that really leads us to the questions about the V8 touring cars and the pit stops they're having. Of course, it's made the racing a bit more interesting because there's actually passing, but it's in the pits, compared to previous racing when it was HRT off into the distance, and now they just win the pit stops, don't they?
Well, but let's face it, what's a pit stop for? If you don't need brake pads, why do you change it? When was the last time you changed your brake pads just because I've done a few laps on them? I've driven to the shops and back, better change my brake pads. Why did we have pit stops initially? We were going 500 miles, and you couldn't put that much juice in the tank. And that's what a pit stop's for. Okay, and it's not there for anything else. Like, why did Ray Haroon drop off his rider and put on a rear vision mirror? Because he wanted to go further before he had to fill up.
Well, it's going to be very hard to convince Mr. Revelle that pit stops actually add a new level of interest and excitement to racing, except for where they're technically required.
Well, if you said 22 gallons in the tank, all right, 1 gallon in your fuel lines, a la Smokey Unix style, where you had another 22 in the lines, but, you say, this is enough fuel to go half the distance of the race or three quarters of the distance of the race. And then you have to come in. And then it's when you come in, when does that window open that allows you to finish the race? And then you've got a pit stop. That's a pit stop for, tactics, for reasons. At the moment, look at the GMC 400 last year. If you didn't pit on lap two, then you might as well have packed up and gone home immediately.
Well, I guess that's...
And if you weren't the first car into the pits on lap two, you didn't win.
Yeah, well, that's really the issue now in the V8 touring cars. Should they be allowed to pit under yellow, go into NASCAR-style pit stops? Where, once again, it becomes part of the strategy, but a bit more about picking when to pit, see if you can survive a bit longer on the fuel that's running out, whether the tyres are going to last, stay out there for a bit longer, score a yellow, and win with strategy. And that would make it pretty interesting and pretty tight in the pits if the whole field came in under yellow, just like they do in NASCAR. And,
wouldn't it be good to see 14 pit gantries being pulled down every race, rather than just the one that we get every race?
You'd get a domino effect, couldn't you? I think it's pretty dangerous to think about the whole field coming in to pit all at once here in with these Australian teams. They've shown that they're pretty clumsy, and many of them aren't getting it particularly right. I don't think they need the pressure of everyone being in at once, the whole race being decided in the pit lane at 60 k's. I can see a whole lot of carnage, even though it is speed limited. I think it's pretty dangerous.
So you've let them put the speed limiter on since we've talked.
No, I'm just saying it's speed limited by the guy with the radar gun.
Okay.
These guys really don't have the competence yet to be able to have 30-something cars in the pit lane all at once, so I don't think they should consider it much more. Maybe in a couple of years when they've worked out what they're doing and they've made the pit bays a bit larger and it all works a little smoother, but it would be just chaos if everyone was in all at once.
Well, all these topics and more will be discussed next week, along with the Rally of Cyprus. Dover has the NASCAR's, CART has the Milwaukee Mile, the best oval track race of them all, the Milwaukee Mile, even though I love Indy.
Yeah, and this really is the pinnacle of motorsport in many respects. What a weekend. We've got Monte Carlo, Indianapolis. I know that a lot of people are going to be turning up for work tomorrow with very little or no sleep.
Just not turning up.
Yes, so everyone out there can expect sickies left, right and centre, I think. And, these really are the classic races of the year, so they're really worth watching.
And we'll have all the details on all of them, including a delayed coverage of the Indianapolis 500 on Sunday morning sport, 6 till 8 next Sunday morning. Until then, I hope you can join us for Inside Motorsport next week.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via ComradeSat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.